the Hale Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it, weekend edition, back with you. It's Hale Varsity, presented by Currency. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Elijah Herbel. We're rocking and rolling. Beautiful Saturday morning in Nebraska. Kranak up in Omaha. Elijah chained to the studio. Chris Schmidt, thanks for spending time with us. Busy week as we get into a holiday weekend. We'll spend the next hour plus talking some Big Red, and you're welcome to join us. And ways to do that, pretty simple, as it's a stream Saturday show with the magic of YouTube, the Hale Varsity YouTube channel, the Hale Varsity Radio Twitter. Follow that at H Varsity Radio, and then KFOR Facebook, KFOR Sports Twitter, and can find Elijah on Twitter at Herbal Essence, at Schmidt underscore radio. Someday, maybe football season, we'll get Kranak back onto Twitter. Guys, how we doing? Good week? What's the good word?
You guys are late.
I know.
I think we should maybe start there. Well, I mean, what do you think? You know, we look, listen, 7:30 sharp.
Well, what right? is That's, late, really? Can we define late?
Oh, is that where we're going? Is that where we're going, Elijah? I mean, really?
Well, like, think about it.
What is time?
No, I'm not going. Think about it in
it's
terms
a human,
of a, I know.
It's a human construct, dude.
We've had to be perfectly timely for years with us being on the air, but this is now the Hale Varsity Radio audio show on the weekend. If
right,
you remember.
It's different.
So
it's different.
If we show up, say, 5 minutes late, say we're supposed to be on the air at 7:30, but instead we start this at 7:35, we can just do the show until 9:05 instead of getting out at 9. Like, what is late really on this new audio only weekend show? It's loose, you know.
So you're not going all like gummies on me, like, what is time, bro?
No,
like,
no.
What is it even?
It's not philosophical in nature.
It's a human invention. It doesn't even. Okay, so you're not going there. That's good. And I say this in jest. I have been known to be late a time or 7 out of 10. It happens.
We're not keeping score in the history of the Saturday morning show on who's late and who's not. We're okay.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's probably knotted up. It's probably it's like pretty close. I bet. But it does. It's interesting. The audio weekend show edition thing. Like, when are we going to officially name it? I know, Chris, this is starting the way you anticipated.
It's named. It's been named.
Formally declare it.
It's the weekend edition of Hale Varsity Radio. Weekend edition. It's the weekend edition of Hale Varsity.
See, you just got caught yourself. Radio, but it's not.
It's still the podcast.
Not on the radio.
Title.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, I guess you're right.
Everyone's head hurt.
No, it's not. Folks have been along for the ride.
We should really go easy with it and just go Hale Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Pod or something like that. That'd probably be easiest. But I enjoy having the conversation
here.
Every single week.
Speaking of timely, how about Will Walsh last night?
Oh, dude.
Good transition.
We all watched it, of course. But
yes,
when you go back and look at the numbers, dude, no walks. Hello?
No.
Like zero? Over nine
zero.
Innings. 104 pitches. So, quick math, that's like less than 12 pitches an inning. That is ridiculous efficiency by that guy. What an incredible performance. And like Will Bolt said it, and it was I guess after you've been around tournament baseball, and Chris, now you have with your boy there, mm-hmm. Elijah, you certainly have with umpiring. I am with an assistant as an assistant on my boy's little 10U team or whatever. Like, pitching runs out quick. We all know that. And Will Bolt said it. He's like, in tournament settings like this, you need some like ridiculous performances out of nowhere, especially if you're trying to battle back from the loser's bracket. And that was 100% out of nowhere. And how about Will Bolt and them knowing their team that well, knowing their staff that well, to even start the guy? How many games has he started this year? Four? Maybe three? Do you know? He's started a lot.
He's been, and Will Walsh has been hot and cold, much like a lot of the Nebraska pitching. But you want to talk about a momentous moment? I mean, the occasion is there. It's win or go home. And for him to go seven strikeouts, no walks, complete game, just three batters over the minimum, face just 30 batters, was incredible. And Nebraska is able to live to fight today at 1 o'clock against Michigan, or against Maryland. And not only did they get a shot in the arm from Will Walsh, and the offense continues to be maddening when it comes to timely hitting with those situations with runners in scoring position and two outs. I mean, that's super hard to do, but Nebraska has just not been great at it for too long. So Nebraska, we were wondering yesterday, how do they bounce back? Yeah, it's not up. That we – both of us.
I'll put a hand up. We were big doubters of Husker baseball.
And it's not that we're calling them weak-minded. It's just that once emotion sets in, you could get absolutely thoroughly dejected and disgusted with how it went down against Maryland. You get walked off. You played well enough to win. You were set up right there. And you held that offense down. And it goes down like that. So you got to flip around here and go take on Sparty, where you're pissed. You're frustrated and angry. And how'd they do? They responded the right way. And Nebraska said, Will, you got to be the guy again.
That was his second start. That's what I'm saying about Will, right? Like, good on him to know his team enough. Of course, he couldn't have prognosticated, oh yeah, we throw Will, he'll do a complete game four hit shutout. Like, he didn't know that, but to know him enough and be in tune with his team enough to be like, yeah, that's the guy we're going with, we're starting him. It's only his second start of the whole year.
No, I don't, that's
and
not
you're,
right, is
you're
it?
Literally a one you're literally a one and done in a one and done situation, and you give the ball to him in that moment, night game in front of tons of fans in Omaha. Like, good call on Will Bolt, right? Like, really good call on his part.
It had to have been more than two starts on the season, because he got a couple of midweek games.
Nope.
He had a game against Creighton. He did the game against North Dakota State.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong column. You are totally right.
He
has eight.
Okay, I was going to say, it wasn't more than like six or seven, but yeah, I was like, he got a couple of starts, but
he never
went deep like that into a game. He was the guy that would start midweek, and you know their strategy midweek was get Will Walsh four or five innings, and then we're going to let the bullpen take over. I don't think anyone was expecting a nine-inning complete game performance, especially when you look at his stats on the year. With things tended to get a little hairy for him after the fourth or the fifth inning. Carried an ERA over four into last night's game. He was good with the walks all season long, but he never had a start that went that deep into a game. I don't even think it was very close. I can't remember him getting to seven innings once this season. So that kind of performance.
He's only walked eight the whole year in 51 innings.
He did the zone well, but the knock on him was he never really made it too deeply into games. He'd get himself into a bit of a jam, and the bullpen would have to come in and save him in the midweek game. So, I mean, that's what it takes, a gutsy performance like that. And I don't want to say to save your season, but to extend your season as Husker baseball, that's what they needed. I didn't see it coming from Will Walsh, so that's why I needed to put a hand up and say I was wrong yesterday. I thought this team was at risk of rolling over and having the hangover effect following the walk-off loss to Maryland. But this team wanted Maryland again, clearly. A gutsy performance last night, not only from Will Walsh, but I'd add the hitters into that as well. Will Walsh is going to get the headlines, deservedly so. That whole team last night was impressive. I had it, I was at a wedding, so I had the game pulled up on my phone at times. I was able to follow along, and I was very impressed with what I saw from that Husker baseball team. Their ability to battle through adversity, like we saw against Maryland on Thursday night, to come back and have that kind of performance behind Will Walsh. As you laid out, Mark, sometimes that's what it takes in a tournament. One pitcher defying the expectations, going above and beyond, giving yourself a chance to win. Sometimes that's all it takes in a tournament, not only to get to the weekend, get to the important games, but just to light a spark. When you need something to go right, a good pitching performance, save some arms in the bullpen, the confidence that can lead to throughout a weekend can be huge for a baseball team. So we'll see. They got to go take Maryland down twice now, and now I wonder who the hell is going to be starting for
you. I know. That's what I'm trying to figure out right now, too. It's like, so you started your tournament on Wednesday with Emmett, right? So, yeah, you could conceivably go to him today, but it's not advised.
No, he hit, what, somewhere in the 60-pitch range?
Right around 60 is where it went downhill.
But at this point in the season, you're also sort of like, dude, all bets are off. You know, ideally, you get to tomorrow, and then you can throw him, and you feel okay, because that's plenty of rest. So he's right on that cusp. Kaminska's obviously out. Like, that's not going to happen. Except, you know, maybe an inning late or something if you had to. But yeah, I don't know where you go. I'm looking up and down. I wonder if it's a thing where you just throw a lot of different arms at him. Almost like your strategy going in is like, we got to keep him off balance because Maryland will make you pay. You know, they're tough offensively. It's up and down the damn lineup. You know, 120 some home runs. Just like a single mistake, and they will capitalize more so than any opponent Nebraska's played all year. They're finally playing like that team that everybody thought was, you know, top 15 to start the year. They started the year 13th ranked in the country, right? They got a couple guys that are, you know, ranked pretty highly, top 100. Players or so for the major league draft coming up, so they're difficult. I don't know what you do when you're like, what would you guys do? What is your strategy going in today, knowing that you have Olsen potentially, he's unlikely to be super sharp on this short of rest.
Here's my
what do you do?
Well, in this. This may get laughed out of the courtroom just because of how his last outing went. But do you go back to the well one more time with your fifth year veteran?
You say
Kyle Perry. Perry. Do you say Kyle, brother? Let's go, John Wayne. Can you give it to us for a few innings? And that's what's so tricky about. Pointing and handing the ball to somebody, because I mean, there's been a consistency drop off after Olsen and after Kaminska. Clearly, I don't know. In Shaneman, it'd be great to maybe do that. I mean, he's done it before in tournament settings, but and for him, I mean, okay, he's got a little blood in his mouth from. The walk-off.
Where's Hawkins at health-wise?
He came in after Olsen, didn't he?
Yeah. I only bring him up because I mean he's a short innings guy, right? He's only got, I think the most he's gone this series, yeah, 3 1/3. Just looking at it, but he has not given up a home run this year, not one. And that's Maryland's game. So and that's why I'm thinking, like, do you go in with a strategy of, no, we're keeping him off balance. We're changing it up on him every two innings. You know, we're tapping into kind of everybody, and we're just mixing it the hell up. We're bringing in lefty fireballers. We're bringing in right-handed crafty guys. We're bringing in every type of pitcher we have.
Maryland's
game, not let them tee somebody up.
Maryland's game is vastly different away from College Park. All right, Maryland's scored a whopping 5 runs in 2 games. They had to hang on against Sparty 3-2. They walk off against Nebraska 2-1. Now I'll say this about Maryland: their pitching's been better than advertised, and that's something that Evan Bland brought up to us, that maybe their pitching is a little underappreciated because of. The their home field, because it is, you swing and it's gone. Maryland's offense is super talented. I mean, LaRusso's incredible, and he put him into the winner's bracket with that walk-off. But I consider Kyle Perry. I really do today to see if the elder statesman can give it to you one more time.
Another thing you have to consider is the fact that it's a potential two games today.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
And you can't leave anything out there in game one. You have to take game one to go get to game two. So mm-hmm. I wonder about, I mean, it's not going to help you at all if you have Emmett Olsen sitting whenever he can go today to help you either tonight or later. So I wonder if you try to get 3-4 innings out of Emmett Olsen to start. I know he was on short rest earlier in the week and he'd be on short rest again, but it was only that 65 or 70 pitches that he threw the other day.
Which is pretty reasonable.
It's reasonable, but whenever he was already on short rest before that, and now he's on short rest again, it's another quick turnaround. I don't think you have enough bullpen guys to try to pitch two bullpen games, so I think you got to get him in at some point today, and I don't see how beneficial it is to save him for game two if you lose game one. So I wonder about trying to get Emmett Olsen out there for 4 or 5 innings in game one and then turn it over to your bullpen. Maybe you let a guy in Drew Christo that you thought was going to be a starter for you. I think he's only started one game for you this year, but he's in his limited work, which has been 1 to 2 innings at a time, occasionally getting, I think he hit 3 or 4 a couple times this year. He's got a mid-3 ERA, so I look at Drew Christo as maybe being a guy. Kyle Perry, as Schmitty laid out, but you got to win game two or game one to get to game two tonight. So I look at Emmett Olsen potentially being a guy to go out there and eat up 4 or 5 innings for you in game one, just because you got to leave it all out there in game one.
Christo has, you're right, he's at 3.24 ERA. He's given up one bomb this year. Opponents only .190 against him, batting against him. He's still good for a wild pitch, though, or two. And that, you know, on games as tight as they are, that's a little worrisome.
I'm worried about the walks. I mean, the control.
And the thing with Christo all year long is it's been about one inning. Like, he's going to get you 3, 4, 5 outs, and then it's time to go find somebody else in the pen. But as we kind of laid out, it's what you need in tournament time. You need some guys to go defy some expectations, some guys to go out there and perform better than they have been on the season if you want to go win a tournament. So,
dude, 16 innings, he's plunked 5 dudes.
he's hit
5 guys.
That's still fewer than Junior.
And he's got 4 wild pitches.
Hey, think about it from Maryland's point of view, though. If Drew doesn't know where it's going, the hitters don't know where it's going either. You know, you're up there in that box a little fearful.
Give me Ricky Vaughn. He's a true power pitcher.
Oh, right? Yeah. Nebraska hasn't had one of those guys in a while. He is a true power pitcher. He looks like frickin' Clemens.
I don't want to go stand in front of a Christo fastball, is all I'm saying.
No, he's legitimately built like Roger Clemens. Like, go look at their size comparison. They're identical. So he's an imposing guy up there. But he's also wild, and that is a spacious backstop at the Chuck. Mm-hmm. And so you throw a wild pitch there. Just ask Stanford against Vanderbilt a couple years ago.
You're running for days.
Yeah, with a walk-off win based off a wild pitch, you know. So
from second?
It's tough, though. It is tough. And, like, if Nebraska pulls this off, if Nebraska somehow upends Maryland on 2 in a row today, I mean, just that would be it is so unlikely to happen. It is so unlikely to happen. Like, if it does, absolute miracle.
Well, there's not going to be a beer available in the old market.
Look out for that shot record at that one place.
Yeah, no Jello kidding. Shots. Let's speak a minute to the Nebraska fandom, and they have shown out in full force this week, really, as we welcome in Brandon Vogel.
Whoa, what's the hat?
What is the hat?
It's a Seattle World's Fair in, like, 1968 or something like that. Their minor league team wore it for, like, a year.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I like it. Vogues, we were just talking Husker baseball, and they made it happen last night against Michigan State. We're playing paper, rock, scissors as to who Will Bolt hands the ball to today. But I was going to jump into the Nebraska fan base for a moment because you've seen it in Omaha this week. You saw it with folks having the back of the Big Red against Maryland, and then for sure in an elimination game against Michigan State. Great crowd for Nebraska there. But it also translated to the phones and computer screens trying to infiltrate Boulder earlier this week. A little birdie told you anything? How many or what was the success rate for Big Red football fans for September 9th? Any insight?
Yeah, the only thing I have to go on is the little blue birdie. It seemed like on Twitter, most people that wanted tickets were able to get them. So, I mean, it's probably not going to be what we saw in, what was it, 2019 when Nebraska went out there, just because there's more Colorado fans interested in Colorado football at the moment, I believe. But, you know, Nebraska fans are going to find a way to get there. And for those people who maybe aren't able to get a ticket, like, it's one of those drivable games. A drivable game, right now, I understand, like, it's not next door if you're in Lincoln or Omaha. but that people have a history with, you know, from the Big 8 and the Big 12 days. So I think there's going to be plenty of red in Boulder. Of course, there was always going to be, despite whatever efforts Colorado wanted to make to prevent that.
I don't know how dialed in you are to their current roster situation, Brandon, but a little damage control being done by Dion. They released it on video. He's doing, he's talking with like some boosters, and he's like, hey, people need to stop lamenting what left and really think about what's coming. What's coming is even better. But we talked before, there might be 1,000 dudes in the transfer portal, but how many of those dudes are quality? And then how many of those dudes are coming to Colorado ready to compete this year? Do you know where they're at? Are they like if you're at 85 scholarships, are they at like 45? Are they at 70? Are they like, do you have any sense of that?
I don't know currently. And I, you know, they were in the 40s sort of at the start of May, you know, portal window is closed. Like, this is where it's at. And I haven't seen a whole lot of any additions they've made since then, but my impression is there's still a lot of work to do. And sure, you've got 85 scholarships to give out. You're going to give them out to somebody, but it's tough because like that Colorado team last year was really, really bad, like historically bad in a like 60 years of college football. These Power Five teams, like they don't fall this far. So I get it. Almost anything would be an upgrade at most spots, but you know, if you're leaning that hard on this second transfer window, I did like a really quick, and I'm going to go back to it at some point when I get more time in the summer, did like a really quick analysis of just like, here's what the first transfer portal was, and the blue chip percentage, so 4- and 5-star guys, was 20% or somewhere about there. In the second window, it was around 12 or 13%. So, I mean, it's just, you're getting, if you're having to rely on it at this point, it's not the same as like kind of the great December, January reshuffling that we saw this year. So it's really interesting. Like, they'll get enough guys to fill out an 85 man scholarship roster. But then like, how much time are you spending doing all of that? Whereas Nebraska, you know, had a transfer portal addition. I think because it was a good fit, it was a right fit. I think the staff was happy to stand pat if they did, but they found a player they liked. But I was just editing a long Q&A with Matt Rhule that's going to be in our yearbook. And, you know, he's talking about like all of the stuff they were doing in the spring and all the stuff they have to do in the summer, focus on competition and building a tough team, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, he's not trying to fill out a roster right now. So what's that look like? Once you get all the guys you need, how do you even spend enough time getting ready for the season and trying to instill some of these things? And I'm not saying they're not happening. I'm just saying, I don't know.
Brandon Vogel's with us from HailVarsity.com and magazine managing editor, weekend edition, Mark Kranak of Hail Varsity. And you can absolutely get that yearbook. The deadline is May 31st. The yearbook is your go-to for the Nebraska football preview, the 2023 edition, and can subscribe, hailvarsity.com/offer. Get the digital. Vogues, to focus in on the yearbook with just the team that you've been a part of and been in charge of for a number of years, Bud, between what Erin Sorensen's able to do as she looks at the offensive line. Her and Brady sat down with Coach Rule, as you alluded to. Really had fun talking with Jacob yesterday, Padilla, about his feature with looking at how Nebraska's flipped positions for a number. Drake Keeler and his sit down with Gabe Irvin. And, of course, Brady Altman's dives into that Texas pipeline. I want to go back to Erin and Brady's chat with Rule and a little nugget on the Hail Varsity Twitter. On Hail Varsity Twitter was dropped. And as you look at Rule, what do you think his biggest challenge is this season? I mean, is it confidence? Is it depth? Is it two new offenses? Is it kind of cohesion? Is it something as simple as belief? I mean, what do you think he's got to tackle? And he's going to do it step by step by step. I mean, he's got a plan, and this is volume three of that plan at another spot.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there are some real, like, logistical challenges, the sort of stuff any new coach faces at any new program. Like, do you have the guys that you want? Do you have enough of the guys that you want from just like a talent? Like, we have some new ideas, some, you know, we may ask our middle linebacker to do something different than the existing middle linebackers are used to doing. Like, how do you tackle that? But I really think the biggest challenge, and Rule talks a lot about this in that Q&A, is getting the players to not just understand, but believe that everything that happened prior to this doesn't matter. Like, and to be honest, like, I think that, well, it is, he says that in that Q&A, that his mantra is really what's next. And he specifically says that's with an exclamation point, not a question mark. And you think back to Nebraska and the bizarre run of one score losses, all that stuff. You don't even want to bring it up at this point, but I get that. But it seemed like that stuff lingered. So can you truly get to a point where it's like, hey guys, we're going to be, that Colorado game might be tight going into the fourth quarter. Minnesota game probably going to be tight going into the fourth quarter, just with the way Minnesota typically plays. Can you forget all of the times this hasn't worked out before? And I think that is probably maybe the biggest hurdle, that if you clear it, and we won't know until November if Nebraska fully cleared it, they kind of cleared it. I think that's probably the biggest one in my mind.
Brendan, how have you seen and sorry, Mark, here, I need to ask, how have you seen Matt Rule and his staff try to kill that old mentality, that mentality of being unsure of yourself, not being confident in your abilities? Because that seems a little bit harsh to say. Whenever you look back at the last couple of years, there always seems to be that self-doubt that creeps in. Have you seen Matt Rule and his staff take steps to try and curb that? Or is this an everyday process? What have you seen from that?
Well, I don't know that I've seen it myself firsthand, because, you know, I'm not there. But what I think you have to do is, I think you have to model it, and you have to kind of be that guy from the first meeting you have with the team. And it, you know, I think you, as you go through and you start practices and you start workouts and all that stuff, and they're getting ready to start summer workouts here again next week. Like, you have a bad practice. Maybe things aren't, guys are missing assignments, that sort of stuff. I think your reaction to those things is where you have the chance to say, like, hey, I'm not just telling you, I'm not just putting a mantra on the wall. You know, all respect to Ted Lasso, this, you know, you can put believe on the wall. But if you don't act that way and you don't truly believe, it's just a sign on the wall. Right. So I think it's that, it's saying, like, hey guys, like, we had bad practice yesterday, whatever. We had a good practice yesterday. The next day, it's the same. Like, what happened has happened, and we can't change any of that at this point. And it seems simple. Like, this all seems like, you know, motivational speaker stuff, but I really do think coaching at this level, which is the second highest level of football you can play in the world, behind the NFL, it's still really about that.
Brandon Vogel with us on the Hail Varsity Something on the Weekends edition, radio, audio, podcast, live.
There you go. Hail Varsity on the Weekends. Is that better for you?
It's a little better. We're still naming it. We're going to have a brainstorm. We're going to have a brand exploration.
14 years later, we're still naming it. Okay.
Yeah. just perusing Colorado's roster. One, it's a mess. Like, just how they structure it. Some people are DL. Other people are defensive line. Some people are cornerback. Some people are DB. Like, get your stuff together over there. One guy's center, but he's not considered OL. Whatever. You can tell they're throwing that thing together. Four human beings listed as defensive line, though. That's it. And listen to their sizes. 6'3", 250, grad student. 6'3", 275, grad student. 6'4", 255, grad student. They have one dude above 300 pounds on the defensive line. They only have four. And then they have an edge, a single edge. So five people, conceivably, that you can put on the defensive line as we sit here and talk today. And a couple of them transfers. Now, they are older, you know, having some grad students. That's obviously working in their favor. But it's like you – and they have like 11 receivers. You look at that alone, just like your game plan against them is really simple, right? Like, it's we are just running right at you, period, until you can stop it, and that's it. Like, isn't that probably what's going to happen to Deion this year? Is that, I mean, that's what you do. You just run it right at him, because the likelihood of them being able to withstand that is extremely low.
Yeah, the Colorado-Utah game this year might have to be at 2 a.m. because it's not suitable for most viewers the way that could go. And, you know, when you think about it from like a Nebraska kind of matchup scenario, getting to go play Minnesota to start, you know, whatever happens in that game, probably not the worst thing for what Nebraska is going to see the next week. And what we know that, at least offensively, Nebraska hopes to do, which is play pretty Minnesota-y, I think, is a big piece of it. So that's the big thing with this Colorado, you know, this Colorado gamut. And it's fascinating. Like, we don't know if it's going to work. Maybe it does. But I think the big question that, like, football people have with it is, yeah, you're gonna, you know, you can go out and get the top two receivers from USF last year, which Colorado did. You're always going to be able to get receivers, and, you know, Deion had his quarterback ready to go. You'll find some guys. They got a running back from Kentucky who's experienced. I think he was there for four seasons.
A running back. The other ones are tailbacks.
Yeah,
sorry.
Of course.
Speaking back to the quality of their roster, but go ahead. Sorry.
I'm gonna find out who is in charge of updating the roster at Colorado. I'm just because it's probably like a grad assistant or maybe even a student who works in sports information department.
Dude, I think it's whoever has a spare minute. Like, it's I don't think it's one person. Yeah.
I'm gonna send that person a note and just be like, I appreciate what you're doing here. But it's the you know, back the question is like, can you do it on the line? And if you've only got five defensive linemen, and anybody else who needs defensive linemen is out there, like, probably reaching a little bit at this point with guys that are still in the portal. And I would guess that's probably the case on the O-line too.
So Brandon, Mark led off this question by saying that the game plan against Colorado with that defensive line is going to be run the ball at them until they prove they can stop it. But wouldn't you say that's most likely going to be the game plan based on what we've heard from Matt Rhule and Satterfield all year long? That even if it's Michigan across them, then they want that mentality of, we're going to run the ball at you until you prove you can stop it.
Yeah, I think they hope to. They hope to be there. I think they have the running back room and the running back depth to really do that. And we know that Rhule has maintained his positivity around the the offensive line. It's just, for those of us that watched the offensive line the past 2 years, it's tough to write that in pen. So that'll be the thing. Like they'll try to go that route. Like, I think, if you want a barometer for how this Nebraska season is going offensively, it's probably time of possession might be a good one to look at. I have problems with that stat sometimes, but like, I think controlling games that way, if things are going well, Nebraska is going to be a team that has the ball the majority of the time.
Brendan Vogel's with us, weekend edition. It's Hail Varsity. Get the yearbook by May 31st if you want it included in your Hail Varsity magazine subscription, hailvarsity.com/offer. Get the digital as well. Bundle it. Vogues, how big of an advantage is it for Minnesota to have seen Syracuse in the bowl game? Tony White's 3-3-5. They see Tony White for real this time to open the season. I know they've got to go through all sorts of Syracuse film, but they saw it up close and personal. It held him to 78 yards on 22 carries. And oh, by the way, had 13 tackles for loss.
Yeah, well, I think our experience as professional observers of Nebraska football is if you just change up your defensive front from whatever is expected to something that's not, you automatically win, right? Saw that.
Sure.
Yeah. Three-man front. Oh, it was a four-man front. Sorry. Yeah, you're sunk. No. I think the Syracuse piece of it's pretty real. Like, if you're Minnesota and it's all happened in the past, like, of course you want to go to the college football playoff if you could, but if you're like, well, the bowl game's done, what's the best possible bowl game we could have played to get ready for our season opener in the next year? It's probably Syracuse against Nebraska's new defensive coordinator who was there then. So they'll have probably as good a beat on what Nebraska should be like. You obviously don't know how they change things and how they use their personnel, which in this defense can be a pretty big thing, but it's a slight advantage for Minnesota. Minnesota loses quite a bit of production on both sides of the ball. Obviously new quarterback, they're pretty good at wide receiver. But got to replace Mo Ibrahim as well. And defensively, there's a good amount to replace too. So this is a Minnesota team that I don't know kind of where they're going. I mean, they're going to be good. Like, I think PJ Fleck has definitely earned the benefit of the doubt there for me. But are we talking 9-win good? Or are we talking 7-5 and really annoying in every game that you play?
They're a tough out. Basically, yeah. Right? Like, they've at least established that, they're going to foul off pitches and they're going to, not easy to get out. By the way, little trivia. Did you guys know Pearl Jam is playing in Minneapolis that Saturday?
You've mentioned it to me about changing my Friday flight.
So Huskers, Minnesota, Thursday. I already checked. No Twins game Friday. That would have been the ridiculous trifecta. But, Saturday, Pearl Jam is playing there. So there's that whole thing as well.
Vogues, have you seen Pearl Jam?
No, I haven't actually.
Me either.
Given my age and when they came up and when they were most popular, like, they were definitely out there. I remember buying their live albums when they put out like an entire tour's worth of live albums. And you could
get,
but never seen them in person. I mean, that's boy, I tell you what, shaping up to be a pretty good opening last week of August if you're a Husker fan. Like, if you're going to do the, well, I got to be there for volleyball, and then next day we're in Minnesota for an opener, and then find something to do Friday. I'm sure there's something there. We'll poke around in the area. And then if you got Pearl Jam on Saturday, man, you're kicking off Labor Day weekend, right?
Like, it's not bad.
You can spend $1,000 like that. Pearl Jam tickets, Nebraska, Minnesota tickets, Husker volleyball tickets. Like, follow it up next week with a trip out to Colorado. We're talking $1,500. Like, you can blow up your money like that minimum at the start of football season. Tell you what.
That's why we're talking about it now. We got a budget. I know,
we don't. Shout out to the pharmacist Jeff when Pearl Jam was at PBA. My buddy Jeff, in high school, he would join fan groups, right? So Dave Matthews, Pearl Jam, he would get in their mailing list. Yeah. And even as a teenager, it paid off as crusty old 40-year-olds for us, because he got us. And this is how long ago Pearl Jam was in Lincoln. It was 2014. Yeah. I think May, maybe. Anyhow, he got his floor seats.
Yeah.
So it was great. Quick quiz around the room, Elijah. You may or may not want to participate in this, but what Pearl Jam song would you want to see live? Ooh. What is the song?
Oh man, there's quite a few. Even Flow, I think, is just
basic answer. Yeah.
That's a obvious classic one. What's the one that's a little bit slower?
I was going to say Jeremy.
The one that's a little bit slower, Release. Is it Release Me? That one, he hit some octaves that are pretty killer. Okay. It's one of those bands that, like, you probably know all the words, even mm-hmm. if you don't have them downloaded and on your playlist, because you just kind of hear them just by living in America. You know, kind of like every time you go to Walgreens, Sheryl Crow's on, like, it's, you know, you just, they're just there. They're just part of the soundtrack of life. Yeah. When was the last time you went to Walgreens and you didn't hear Soak Up the Sun? I mean, it just, it's, you know,
it's on repeat.
Always there. Yeah. Pearl Jam, similar. Like, you probably know all the lyrics to like 30 Pearl Jam songs without having actually studied it.
Well, and that's why, you know, Chris has put us in a tough spot here, because the correct answer, what song do you want to hear live, is going to be Even Flow. But I don't want to say that, because everyone's going to be like, oh, this guy, he's like not a real Pearl Jam fan. He's going to say Even Flow, of course. But like at the end of the day, whenever I'm at that Pearl Jam concert, I'll enjoy other songs. But when Even Flow comes on, I'm going to enjoy it. Also, Schmitty, I can't believe you pulled the age card on me and said, oh, Elijah doesn't have to answer this one.
No. I pulled fans the age of any card. Age. You are a connoisseur of many, many things. And I know you know a little Pearl Jam, but I didn't know how much you liked Pearl Jam.
I mean, I wasn't alive during the time, but I still appreciate Pearl Jam.
That's thank you. My
Pearl Jam's like Zeppelin to him for us.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, that's fine. That's
actually, yeah.
Vogues,
Nirvana's more like Zeppelin, honestly.
Okay. Good call. Do you fancy Pearl Jam, Vogues, and are you going with the? Yeah. Are you going with? Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Are you going with a song that you would pick?
I was never the biggest Pearl Jam fan. Not that I disliked them. I was just kind of like, yeah, they're around. There's a couple songs I like. But the song I always liked the most from them, which was kind of a live staple, was Yellow Ledbetter.
Nice.
So yeah, that would be really the one I would go in. Like, I want to see that. But I think Elijah might be on the right track. I think live Jeremy is probably its own experience. And I am... we'll play the age card on Elijah again. I don't know if this is the case for you, Chris and Mark, but like I saw Jeremy, the video on MTV so much as a youth that I'm just like, it's a great song, obviously an important song. And I like it. There are just songs in my life at this point where I'm like, I like it, but you know what? I don't need to hear that anymore. Like, it's not that I'm going to avoid it. I'm just like,
I know what you're saying, man.
I've got all my Jeremy.
So that's how I feel. That's how I feel about like Dave Matthews Band. Like, appreciate them, respect them. Don't feel the need to download any of their stuff, because it's just like, and I know Chris is just staring into my soul. Like, what the hell's the matter with you? He's amazing live.
No, that's the whole difference. Like, I don't have that much on my playlist of that's not live. Like, if I had to do over again, I would have found a way to Radio City Music Hall to see him live acoustically. And as much as I've seen him, the best I've ever had of his performance was when he did 45 minutes in Blue Springs, Missouri, as his own opening act with him and just a guitar, just doing acoustic. That's, I think that amazing. Was incredible. That was incredible. He's been awesome. It's been fun, but yeah, the acoustic part has always been burned, and I hope I get that a second time. I don't think I will. I'm going to either go Better Man or Black. And I know those are obviously super trendy takes, but I
well, that's got the thing with them is they have like 30 of those.
I know, but Better Man, yeah. Like Better Man, when he did it at Madison Square Garden, Eddie and Pearl Jam, it was awesome. I mean, I still watch that YouTube clip of the concert. I'm playing music on my speakers here because it was so cool. And it would get turned into a sing-along, clearly, the first 5 minutes of the song.
Okay, outside of
back
the
to football.
Real quick, sorry. Outside of the titans of industry, like your Dave Matthews, like your Pearl Jams, best bands you've seen live that are somewhat surprising. Just real quick.
Big Head Todd and the Monsters.
Okay. Brandon?
That was at the Rococo 20 years ago.
When I was living in Boston in the early 2000s, I saw My Morning Jacket, a band that I really like,
yes,
and still like, at like a super small like basement of a Middle Eastern restaurant venue that was like blew my socks off. That's probably one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, Jim James, man, that stuff's really good, really good. They played Pinewood, and a couple people that I saw that talked to that went there were just like, dude, they were unbelievable in that setting. So this is kind of weird, but Tesla. I saw Tesla at, it was like Z Fest or something, you know, like Z92, whatever. And it was like hair bands. Tesla was album perfect, man. They were, I mean, you would have thought they were lip singing, but they weren't because you heard the peas popping and stuff. Like, fantastic.
For a second, I thought we were talking about the car brand. I didn't realize Tesla was a band.
Wow.
Gary Sharp.
Yeah. Wow. What's going on?
Okay, Sharpie, let me catch you up. We were talking Minnesota weekend, okay, where Husker fans are going to go volleyball, invade Minneapolis, figure out something to do Friday. Cranach's trying to talk us into going to Pearl Jam Saturday. Stay in the extra
Saturday day in Minneapolis.
And we got into what song of Pearl Jam would you want to see live, and then got into band. We have talked a hell of a lot of football and baseball, I promise you. But
it's that time of year.
But we gotta get your thought here on like, okay, what sneaky good band that you've seen live and also
outside of the Titans. Like, you can't say like U2, Dave Matthews, Pearl Jam, like those guys are off the table. Has to be relatively obscure.
Gosh, I'm trying to go back. I will say Creed.
Creed? Huh.
Yeah. I saw them at Stir Cove probably 10 years ago.
They probably did.
And that's when they were, yeah, and they were still together and they were normal. And yeah, they didn't have any issues by then.
Jane's Addiction, by the way, is another one. Perry Farrell live. Okay. Dude is awful. Okay. He's an incredible athlete. I think he has like a 38-inch vert. He's jumping all over the place. He's really, really good. Yeah, that's another one.
Well, who do we think will be the artist that'll be announced on the 5th that's going to perform at volleyball?
Oh, some pop country act, guaranteed. Like, come on, right?
Listen to the anger in your voice, Cranach.
Well, it is. It's going to be somebody. It's going to be some pop country act, and people, I love him. You know, it's, come on. It's not going to be Jane's Addiction. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be, hey, Lizzo.
Axel and Slash, what are you doing the 30th?
Dude, it's going to be, yeah. Right? Like it is, right? It's going to be pop country.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the hope of getting like a Taylor Swift part of her stadium tour to do Memorial Stadium out. We get Garth Brooks. Country artists are like super popular around here. I would keep going back to the well, but it'll be like Parker McCollum for everybody out there that
never
is like
heard of
new
him
into country.
Okay. Never heard of him. See, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be that Parker McCollum.
Well, it's about the volleyball, like, but it's about the volleyball. I mean, there's so many seats that are being taken. Do we even need the concert anymore? I think the concert are for the kids. That's what my neighbor tells me.
Now, I would say though, because you have 90,000 there, that, you know, you all of a sudden do enter into a different strata of possible musicians that would want to play that, right? Like, you don't have to settle for Parker McCollum at that point. You might be able to get Reba.
Yeah, but don't you think that they've already, before they sold 90,000 tickets, they locked down the artist?
Nope.
I would think.
I don't know.
Here's the better, I think you could also go with the classic, yeah, we had an artist locked in, but then we sold 90,000 tickets, and now we can set our sights a little higher.
There
will be lawyers.
I think you bring in Errol Spence and Bud Crawford. That's what I would do, but whatever.
As a rematch a month later.
Yeah.
So here might be the better question. When we are all in Boulder, who will be Dion's friend the day of the Nebraska-Colorado game? Snoop?
Oh.
Lil Wayne? Nate Newton?
I think it's not going to be Andre Rison. I know that.
No.
It's not going to be him.
He'll pull the Snoop card. I think Snoop will show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Can see that. What's your prediction there, Brandon? Dion's guest star of the day, Parker McCollum?
No, I don't think so. Though I do appreciate Elijah saying Trev Alberts might try to Colorado roster this musical artist for volleyball day in Nebraska. Be like, yeah, we liked what we had previously, but something else has come along in the portal. I think Snoop probably has to be the odds-on favorite. You know, it's the home debut for Coach Prime, and we've seen that relationship before. I think that's probably betting favorite.
It's probably Taxi Driver. It's probably like the local cover band. Taxi Driver finally gets their big break. I don't know. 311. Why not 311? Right, like Nebraska native 311. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You guys on one side of the, you know how they have it set up in Boulder where they have the stands in the end zone and each side is where the teams come out. On one side, you have Dion coming out and Snoop is right next to him and Ralphie's in front of him. And then on the other side, for one game and one game only, and he doesn't play, of course, Clinton Childs is dressed in uniform, leading Nebraska down the walkway onto the field,
staring down Ralphie.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And hey, so you go option left.
Now this is a question for Brandon because he is of all of us, he has got the eye for photos. Is that one of the more iconic pictures in Nebraska football history? The picture in Boulder of T.O. pointing Ralphie away and Clinton standing there like he's going to charge the Buffalo.
It's definitely up there. It's probably in the top five. And you think about that moment from like what we do at Hail Varsity. I'm not the photographer, but I work closely with them. Like, you know, you play that game in Colorado. This is what it was in 2019. We're like, well, we got to make some images of Ralphie running onto the field. It's one of my favorite things in college football, legitimately. But everybody's trying to make images. It's like, how do you find a moment and get the one? And a lot of times it's like being ready and being in the spot, because I guarantee you that moment, you know, it's frozen in time now for us. And it looks like this huge standoff, which is why it works as a photo, but it was probably less than 2 seconds of like that. And, you know, it's like I said, I'm not a photographer. I kind of wish I were a lot of the time, but being able to get something like that has got to be a pretty great feeling.
Well, the three most iconic photos are that photo, and then you have the Nebraska offensive line staring down the Miami defensive line in the Orange Bowl. That's number two. Yeah. And the number three is Butch Hug kicking everybody off the field at the Akron game. I think it's a rain delay. It's top three.
Hey, this is a good topic. We need to think about this and go back to it later in the summer because of Memorial Stadium's 100th anniversary. Like the most iconic photos taken in Memorial Stadium. That sounds like a great Hail Varsity project.
It does, and I'm glad you said that because as Elijah was talking about his top three, I was like, oh, we hadn't done that before. Got to wrangle some photo licensing rights, but that's okay. We do that all the time.
Because one that comes to mind is the Kelly Phelps hit in the Oklahoma-Nebraska game. That was a great still shot.
Yeah,
it was also a
kickoff, right?
It's also a kill shot.
That's where he break the guy's jaw?
No, it's collarbone.
Collarbone, that's it, yeah. And he broke something.
Our old buddy L. Kent Walgamont was on the sideline when that happened. And he recounted the moment where all he heard was screaming. Because Rude comes down and absolutely annihilates that guy. It was one of those fluttering kicks that were was super close to the sideline. So he's got a tiptoe, you know, and he's not going full speed, and he just gets absolutely annihilated. Yeah. Guys, we've all watched Coach Osborne over the years, and the footage after that of him turning the same color as his hair when they said it wasn't a fumble was priceless, because he's like on all fours, palms slamming the turf. Like, he never lost it. He was always cool and calm and pretty stoic. He lost his bleeping mind after they called that the down by contact.
So a little backstory here on great photographs of Nebraska football history and kind of athletic history. There are a lot that have disappeared, because remember when they moved the whole athletic department from the South Stadium to the North Stadium, mm-hmm. Sports Information, which was in a tiny little office in South Stadium, they had a back room where they just stored everything, media guides, photos and stuff. And so they didn't move everything. They threw out a lot of stuff. And also, when the like Richard Vogus was the main photographer, sports photographer for the university, they would just store in boxes on a separate part of campus and just in a room, like they weren't, you know, climate controlled or anything like that. And so a lot of stuff got thrown away. So I know Mike Babcock has talked about this a lot, is he's kept a lot of stuff, but he has searched for a lot of stuff, because things like from the 70s, the 60s and the 70s and even the early 80s got tossed. And so it's hard to find any of the, you know, like find some of the great pictures from different angles like that hit.
Wow. Yeah.
Man,
file management is difficult these days.
That's a list. That's a list to go down. Vogues, what's coming up from you this weekend? But thanks for a little OT with us.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it. Drake's been doing a great job, of course, Big Ten baseball tournament. So that's kind of the lead story for the weekend. A bunch of yearbook stuff still to work on. But we're at a point now where we're, you know, moving the furniture around versus building the furniture itself. So feeling like we're in a pretty good spot there. But thanks for having me, guys. I hope you all have a good holiday weekend. Get some time. So
thanks, Brandon.
You too, man. Appreciate you, brother.
Right, thanks, Brandon.
Yep.
See you, Pearl.
Yeah, I do know one thing. When the Hail Varsity yearbook comes out, because Brandon and the whole crew do such a fantastic job, is it will not have a quarterback breakdown that Casey Thompson has mentioned, and there's a picture of Casey Thompson.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's important.
If you are picking up your Athlon, you will find a full breakdown of that quarterback derby, which is, you know, now see, that's the tough thing with preseason football magazines. That's why, like, Hail Varsity, you know, Brandon's talked about pushing the deadline back. Phil Steele does it. Athlon always likes to go first. Well, you have to go, like, to print, I think, like, right around the middle of March or the middle of – or the first part of April. And now that they have that late, you know, portal window, you're kind of you kind of roll the dice that no major guys go into the portal. And in this case, you're going to – thankfully, Casey Thompson wasn't on the cover.
Well, there's this old adage about a business. There's this old adage about business is that you could be fast, cheap, or good, right? Like, and you can't be all three, but you can choose two. Athlon is clearly chosen fast. Like, that's what we're going to be, right? We're going to be fast, but that means they're not good. That means they're not good. And Chris is pulling up the photo of, if you're just listening, Chris is pulling up the photo of Keo pointing Ralphie off the field. Clinton's ready to throw down.
Is that Clint Finley behind him too? That's got his back. Is that number?
Oh, 19? Out of Cuero, Texas, man. Uh-huh. He was an assassin.
Hard hitting safety.
And this is a minor thing as I look at Ralphie the Buffalo. First off,
oh boy,
isn't he actually a bison?
Yeah, he is.
Can we throw
that's
that out
a great
there?
Call.
That is like, I don't want to say infuriating. That's annoyed me for a long time. That's a bison,
our resident
not a buffalo.
Biologist here.
Big difference. Yep. Also. Yep. Whenever you talk about Ralphie, what's Athlon's preview of Colorado? Is it like 35 guys? How are you going to preview that if you have to go to print in mid-March? Yeah.
Gary, we were talking through their roster before you joined here. Yeah. Like the roster that's actually listed on their website, which total mess. They're crowdsourcing that. There's no naming standards. Like some people are center. Other people are OL. Other people are OT. There's like defensive back spelled out. And then there's DB. It's a mess. Whoever's available and has the password is able to update their roster. But they only have four human beings
and an edge if you count him as a defensive lineman. Four human beings on the roster that are defensive linemen. That's it. Only one of them's above 300 pounds. And we were just talking like, I mean, obviously they're going to be able to, hopefully for their...
Frozen in time.
You and me, Sharpie? Elijah?
Yeah, and Elijah.
Well, I got one more thing here on Ralphie.
Least, oh, okay. Just by virtue of that alone. I'm just being... And so that's why I think that's the meaning of life. And so,
well,
you're on frozen, Han.
Hey, so that the part about the defensive lineman is true. I've been told by a couple of people that I've interviewed that their defensive line room is pretty light. So that they don't have like a lot of bodies, and of course not big bodies. Guys, how would you like to be TCU? At least when Nebraska plays them, they'll have a game of film. And so they'll have an actual like roster to go off of. But if you're TCU, outside of Deion's son at quarterback and Travis Hunter and a couple of other guys, you really don't know what you're up against. I mean, it's going to be like a great mystery. So at least Nebraska has the advantage of they'll have a game of tape against a quality opponent. And so they'll, you know, be able to kind of figure some things out. But yeah, I don't think their lack of players listed on the roster is not a surprise, because they also have to like do the paperwork and add guys and all of that kind of stuff. So it'll be, if they're not, I mean, I think June 1 is when you can start to figure out who's on the roster and go from there. But man, that whole experiment is going to be wild. I mean, I think everybody in college football is watching the good, the bad, and the ugly on what happens in Colorado, because we've never had anything like this.
Yeah, it's outside of like probate. It's almost like they're coming off the death penalty or something, or off probation. Well, roster wise,
doesn't it feel like an expansion football team?
Big time.
Yeah. Right. Hey, by the way, good comment in the stream that I think is worth bringing up. The last comment there, I'm not sure if you can do that, Elijah, but it's a pretty important one. And the question is, why no hat, Mark? Not wearing a hat today. Because I got a fresh fade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when you get a fresh fade,
it looks good.
When you get a fresh fade, you got a good week and a half to show that thing before the Teen Wolf neck hair stuff starts coming in. And then you just got to go hat. But me and Gary talked before, and Gary decided, like, hey, are we going no hat? And he's like, I'm in. So Gary went no hat as well. And that's just, you know, that's just what we're going with today. But it's a great question.
As the kids would say, no cap.
Thank you, Elijah.
Sharpie,
this show young and fresh is all I'm doing.
Yeah. You are totally doing that. Yeah.
Gary,
okay,
what a get,
Tesla.
Yep. Gary Sharp is with us. And Sharpie, what a get your reaction to Will Walsh last night and just outlook for Nebraska baseball. Big time response for Will and company as they get to stay alive for today.
Yeah. You know what? If you're going to win through the loser's bracket, you need a game like that where you can preserve the bullpen. He was magnificent. Off-speed stuff. He kept guys guessing. I mean, a four-hit complete game shutout, an elimination game for a guy that, you know, really hasn't been part of your rotation, you know, here or there, was great. It's exactly what Nebraska needed last night. And if you look at the pitching, outside of a couple of innings against Rutgers, the pitching, which we have scrutinized and we've talked about, you know, the status of Jeff Christie when the season is over, they have come to play in the three games here in Omaha. Now it's the bats. You know, can they start to string some innings together where they're putting up numbers? Because that's what they're going to have to do today to stay alive. But, man, I don't think you can underestimate what Will Walsh did last night. You needed that, and he delivered. You preserved your bullpen. You weren't going to use Shaneman, but now you've got him. You know, he didn't even have to get up, nothing like that yesterday. I thought it was fabulous. I thought they controlled the game, and then they added some insurance in the ninth inning. But Will Walsh was great. And here's a guy that, you know, if you're starting to think about next year in that rotation where Olsen and Kaminska can come back, but I think Olsen will get drafted. I mean, Will Walsh just made a case to be one of your weekend starters next year. As long as he can pitch at the Chuck, because against Creighton and Michigan State last night, he's been great.
Yeah, great control all year, by the way. He's only walked eight guys. So we were talking about this, like, what is your strategy going into today? And for folks that aren't aware of the setup for Nebraska, you have to beat Maryland twice. Maryland, the top seed in the Big Ten tournament, preseason number 13. They sputtered early, but now they've kind of rounded into form. So you have to beat those guys twice. And out of any team on Nebraska's schedule, they make you pay for pitching mistakes more than anybody with the long ball. 120 jacks this year. They're second in the country in home runs. So, all right, you threw Olsen on Wednesday. You threw Kaminska Thursday. Kaminska's definitely not in consideration for today. You had Walsh last night. Olsen's right on that cusp to where if you needed it, you could maybe buy a couple innings from him, but it's dicey.
I think you hold him for tomorrow if you get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So then the approach today is your strategy going in is specifically against Maryland. Is your strategy going into we are going to keep them off balance by throwing variety at them every inning or two? We are bringing in every type of player, not letting them get their timing down, not letting them get a bead on anybody, and just mixing it up? Or are you going with like a Shaneman, trying to get 3 to 4 innings out of him? Yeah. Like, what is your strategy game one? And then what does that mean for game two if you get there?
Well, you know, it's Johnny Holstaff, first and foremost, but I think you start with Jackson Brockett. And you let guys go as long as they're effective. And then, you know, you have a Sears that is in the mix. Shaneman is back into the mix. Kyle Perry's in the mix. I think everybody's available. But I think, you know, Savakul, who is a normal weekend starter for Maryland, he's probably going to start. He's the guy that came in the 10th on Thursday night. I think you start with Brockett. And you ride guys as long as they can go. And you just try and hand the ball off to the next guy out of the bullpen and string together 18 really good innings if you can get there. And then tomorrow, I think you go with Emmett Olsen. But I think you start with a guy and you ride him as long as you can go. They've had a good feel, especially if you go back to that Rutgers game, of when to pull guys when they feel like they're slipping a little bit. So I think that's your approach today. But let's be honest. The bats got to show up. Yeah. I mean, they got to put up some crooked numbers to help out as well, because the pitching has more than done its part in the three games.
Yeah, Matthews 0-for-5 last night in the leadoff spot. That's rare. I mean, the guy's,
he's still dinged, man. He don't look right.
Yeah, so I went that play that he made into shallow left field with his back to the infield and on the run made the catch. I mean, that's a hell of a catch for a guy that his back is not good. You know, like, he's still getting good swings. But look at the first at-bat against Maryland the other night. He didn't really have a full extension, and he still lifted that ball to the warning track. The Bryce Matthews that is 100% probably puts that ball into the bullpen, so he's not 100%. You can see it. You can see on balls that are hit deep in the hole, he'll wince a little bit, but he's still out there playing. So he's a table setter. But they've got to get other guys. You know, they've got to come up with those clutch hits. They finally got them in the ninth inning last night. But we'll see. They've shown they have enough power to put up some big numbers. But today is the day they got to do it.
Yeah. Sharpie, a thought on Daniel Kalen. We were chatting about him, and then he flips his commitment from Missouri to Nebraska. We know that story. But speak to the quarterback community, if you can, in Omaha, because that's been on the rise and it's been pretty impressive. And not everyone's gone D1, but they've impressed. And I think Bronson Marsh has got quite a following, well-deserved. He's done a nice job of working with a lot of kids in the Metro.
He was one of my favorite players to cover in high school, by the way, Bronson Marsh. He was a hell of a player, but I digress.
So it's a rather interesting community because it's kind of like a gated community. They keep their lawn really nice and manicured. You know, the public works, everything works in that neighborhood. It is growing. And a reason you bring up, you know, the former Millard South product, you have guys that are here in the Metro that were college quarterbacks that are working with quarterbacks or are in charge of programs that are starting to produce. And Danny has grown. There's a lot of different elements here to this. I think Bellevue West was put off. Because you remember when the offer from Nebraska originally came, it was reactionary. Nebraska really didn't know much about Danny Kalen, but Danny Kalen, as a rising sophomore, gets an offer from Florida State. Nebraska's like, oh my gosh, who is this guy? They offer him without knowing a lot about him, and that's kind of like, come on, man, he's right in your backyard. So good on the next couple of staffs to learn more about him, and then finally, you know, be open and honest, and that dialogue between Matt Rhule and Mike Huffman that, hey, you know who we're pursuing. We won't say him by name, but if it doesn't work out, he's our guy. And the way they handled him and bringing Satterfield back from California last week to say, hey, we got to get to Bellevue West to work him out. I think they did this the right way. He's a good quarterback that still has got room to grow. I said this right away. He's not Dylan Raiola. He's not a savior. He can be a good quarterback, but he's got to grow. Remember, he's only going into his senior year, and there are still elements which he improved last year that he's got to continue to work on so that you don't go, man, that's just a 7-on-7 quarterback with a big boy arm. He's very smart. His running will get better. He's not a runner. He's a thrower. And he's throwing to two college-level wide receivers, which I think is important when you evaluate him at the next level. So I think it's a good pickup. But you look at, in this area this year, you have Danny Kalen, Anthony Rizak at Westside, a state championship quarterback as a Power 5 guy, in my opinion. You've got Brady McGill at Omaha Roncalli, who is a really good quarterback, kind of in the role of a Cole Payton, which I think North Dakota State is very interested in, Brady McGill at Roncalli. Carson Rahner at Elkhorn South is going to start to blow up this summer. And then Sebastian Serco is somebody who already has a few Power 5 offers at Omaha North. So I think in the state, the quarterback position, because a lot of these guys also, that's the only sport they're playing, and they can work on their craft year-round, is only going to get better. And that benefits Nebraska, where you're not having to go to California or Florida or Texas to get your quarterback. You might be able to go right here in your own backyard. And, man, what a luxury that could be if you feel like that quarterback is good enough to play in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it really is something how it's turned around, and the trend doesn't seem like it's slowing down. If anything, it seems like it's increasing, to where I don't think it's out of the realm that Nebraska is kind of on the road where, you know, I think probably mid-90s to, you know, mid-2000s or so, you could count on 6 to 8 dudes in the state that were kind of worthy of that Power 5 offer, right? And a few just outside of that. Now, you're looking at more like 15. And I think you're on the road to probably 20, you know, within a few years. And it, Gary, would you attribute it directly to the advent of things like year-round training, things like the Warren Academy, that are truly developing kids beyond? Because before, it was really just you played football from, you know, August to November, and that was kind of it. Now it's a year-round thing. There's a circuit. You're traveling. You're doing 7-on-7. You have high-level positional training, good facilities. Do you attribute it directly to that? Like, Nebraska's maybe always had the raw material, but just didn't have the development.
Yeah, I think the 7-on-7 has really taken off in this state, and there are more places like the Warren Academy where guys can throw in the wintertime. I will also add this, and I'm curious on all three of your thoughts, is offenses. Offenses now feature the quarterback in the state of Nebraska. Not everybody, but there are a lot more offenses where they're quarterback driven, and you play in a college type offense where there's a lot more play action. You're throwing the football. I mean, Elijah Schmidty and Mark, can you imagine if I would have told you 20 years ago, hey, there might be more quarterbacks coming out of Nebraska than there are running backs. Remember, the city of Omaha was on an incredible run of producing running backs. Now, we don't really, because of maybe the way the game is changing, we could be in a state where there are more quarterbacks that are going Power 5, Division 1 than there are running backs. How did we flip that?
Well, running backs have been de-emphasized across the sport. I think that's why.
Yeah.
From the pros down through college, down to high school.
And I go back to probably 8 years ago when Bellevue West was on the rise, I guess it's almost 10 years ago now, that Bellevue West team, out to give them their flowers, changed a lot of things. Because that was in a time where Omaha North was the dominant program in the state, where they're running it down your throat, 200-plus rushing yards a game. That was still the standard. But then Bellevue West comes in and kind of takes that crown. They do it with a pass-heavy offense, an offense that looks more like a modern college football team. And I think you have to give Coach Huffman and that Bellevue West team their flowers in terms of being able to change what Class A was, because up until that point, it was still power offenses were what was going to help you go win a state tournament or a state championship. Excuse me. You could still get by with a passing offense, but then that Bellevue West team changed some things. And I can't remember the quarterback's name, but he went and passed for, it was like 600 yards in a game one time, set the Class A record in a shootout. Yeah. And it really changed some things in what this state
Llewellyn
was in high school football.
I think Silas Llewellyn.
Well, they've had a run. They've had Kowalski, Dahlenbeck, who won championships at Morningside. Nate Glantz won a state championship. Jaden Kowalski could spin it. But it's also, that's a great point, Elijah, because on those same teams were the Jalen Bradleys and the Javon Duckers. You know, pretty mm-hmm. good running backs. L.J. Richardson. But mm-hmm. we didn't talk about them. It became, you know, it's become a lot more about the quarterback.
Yep. It's funny how it's shifted. I mean, think of the Central pipeline from Leotis to Calvin to Amon, right?
Yep.
To now we're talking and focusing on quarterbacks, but the last 20 to 25 years, it has shifted from even what offense Nebraska's run. I mean, from
you got Kenton Keats' boy coming up at right. West also, yeah. and.
From option yeah. football to everyone's running four wide spread zone read to now you've got what Bell West is doing where they get their dudes in space. There still is a run game, but it is, to your point, Gary, quarterback centric. That's what your offense is built around with those skill guys, and not everyone runs it. I mean, I grew up on, you know, Prep and Millard North and Crouch in the option game and Ground Chuck, Mazursky, I mean, running for 300 yards for Southeast. So yeah. it's evolved. And there's still, you know, you got the talent, you can run whatever the hell you want.
It's really three programs that brought that more modern offense from the Metro anyways. It was Burke, Millard South, and Bellevue West. Those were the three that, you know, with Jimmy Forsyth at Burke, with, you know, insert quarterback here at Millard South, like they would spread you out. Yeah. And they also had that run game, and they have that modern offense, and that attracted kids because more guys are getting the ball. Yeah. And with open transfer rules, those teams got really good. And then, yeah, that really just spread across the Metro where they're like, God, we're losing out on kids if we don't modernize our offense. You look at Millard North, that's part of why they have not been as good, because they have stuck with the wing bone. Traditionalists love it. It's fantastic to watch. The footwork alone is a clinic from their quarterbacks, but not as many dudes are getting the ball, and it's not, you know, you're throwing eight times a game or whatever it is. That just doesn't attract your top athletes anymore.
Yeah, so the last two Nebraska in-state products that have committed to Nebraska and either here or on the way, look at their style of play. I mean, Harburg was on a – they were a dual threat at Kearney Catholic, mm-hmm. you know, Kalen, but these are two guys that have big boy arms. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I think finally Nebraska at that position in state is starting to follow where the whole game of football is going. But to finish this and to finish your question, Schmitty, I think it's a good pickup. I think Danny's a really good player who is smart. He won't be asked to come in and, hey, you got to be the savior. Cause remember, he's not Dylan Raiola. He is Danny Kalen. You got to let the kid breathe. And I think he'll be able to handle everybody watching Bellevue West this year going, that's the guy, that's the Nebraska guy. I think he'll be built to handle all of that. It was a good pickup, and it was a smart way for Nebraska to handle it. And they got who they wanted at quarterback.
And quickly, Gary, you mentioned the pressure of sorts that's going to be on Kalen next season, as everyone's going to be wanting to watch Nebraska's next quarterback. But quickly, before we get you out of here, can you just touch on the maturity of Kalen through this recruitment process? Like, we hit on what it means for Matt Rhule and his staff that they came back around on Kalen after Ryle, but what does it mean for Kalen that he's able to be mature through the recruiting process and understand the realities of college recruiting, saying, yeah, you're going to go after your top guy. I don't blame you. When you come back around to me, I'll be all ears. I won't be the spurned ex-girlfriend. Yeah. But I'll listen to you. The maturity that he showed during that time, I think, is impressive and a little bit undersold from a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah, no, Elijah, that's a great point. So on the Nebraska end, they're upfront and honest. I think he's also upfront and honest as well. I want to make sure I got a spot somewhere, so I commit to Missouri. But you guys know that I'm a diehard Nebraska fan. But because you're communicating with me about what's going on, I'm okay with you. There's no bridge that is burned here. And I know what the situation is. Hey, I would go after Dylan Raiola as a Nebraska fan as well. But right. Once that doesn't happen, yeah. The door is open and you understand that. So they're upfront with you. And all of a sudden they don't, hey, you know, we lost our guy. Are you still interested? They said, hey, you know the situation, but you know that we want you if we're not able to get the guy that, you know, we've got to pursue. And so that immediately says, hey, we got a good relationship here. And I think that's the big thing in recruiting is communication. You know, that's why I also think Matt Rhule will establish himself as a good bounce back coach. And they're doing that in state. They are saying to kids, hey, if it doesn't work out and you don't want to come to Nebraska and we recruited you, but we lost out to another school, good luck. Hey, I hope you go and you ball out at Oklahoma State. But, you know, just remember that if anything doesn't work out, we're here. That's the way to do it in this day and age where you get a lot of bounce back players that you don't burn bridges in the recruiting process. And you, even if you lose, especially to an in-state kid, you say, hey, man, we wish you the best. You're a Nebraska kid. Go and do it, except for the day that you play us. And you know what? If you ever need anything, we're still here.
Yeah. That's the approach.
Yep. Yep.
Sharpie.
Yep. Oh, so go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to wrap unless you got one more.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, you know, part of the message to Danny Kalin is, like you were saying, he's a Nebraska fan, so he gets it. I mean, you're talking about a once-in-a-generation type quarterback whose dad is etched on the stadium, whose uncle is on the staff. It's just like if you're Matt Rhule, you're like, dude, they'll have pitchforks out for me if we don't make a run here. Like, we have to go after this guy. And I'm sure Kalin got it. I'm sure he's just like, yep, totally get
it. But at the same time,
Pops is on the stadium. You know?
What I know about high-level recruits and high-level athletes is that he might not say it, he might not show it, but that's going to leave a chip on a guy like that shoulder. The fact that that they went after a guy like Raiola.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whenever
he's competing with Raiola at the Elite 11
camp. That's what I was going to say. Whenever you watch the Elite 11 camp, if you get any film out of that, check and see if a guy like Daniel Kalin is going after Raiola, trying to one-up him all through that Elite 11 camp. Because that's how those high-level quarterbacks and those high-level athletes operate. They're going to take that chip on their shoulder. They're going to use it as motivation, regardless of the staff knows that, regardless if the media knows that. Daniel Kalin will use that as motivation.
I think Raiola will. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, here's what I would be curious to see, and we'll all be paying attention next month in Los Angeles, is if DK goes there and plays well, does he get a bump to a 4-star? But if he outperforms Dylan Raiola, Husker Twitter will break. And for a good for this time, it would be a good thing.
I don't know if that's going to – in that setting,
I know. And
like Raiola
and
looks
that
even
because,
better. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I keep saying he's not Dylan Raiola. Do not compare them. They're completely different.
The ball hops out of Raiola's hands like very few human beings on earth can do. Like, period. Seriously. It just
– Mark, quit ridiculous. Hanging on, man. Quit hanging
on. He's coming back. He's coming back. 2 years. He's transferring. Calling my shot right now.
Dude, he's a baller. He'll be at Georgia, and we'll be watching from afar.
No, I just like the two sides of that. Of man, that guy's got arm talent. The ball jumps off his hand. He's got like all the talent in the world. But also, he's not going to start at Georgia. He'll be back in 2 years.
Exactly. Yeah, because they already have like a couple 5-stars, and you know.
Then what? Then Mark, what does that do to Kalin?
Kalin, hey, listen, we love you, bud, but you got to go sit on the bench.
My God.
We know you're a – wow. Know, hey, Missouri probably still likes you. You know, you still have their number in your phone?
Oh, we have 95 more days of this. Holy cow.
Hey, Sharp, grab a bottle.
Appreciate everything you've done for the program. You know,
grab a bottle. You.
Yeah,
Sharpie, enjoy
love
your
you,
weekend.
Dylan. Love you. Hey, guys, thank you. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
You as well.
You too, bud. Thanks, man.
You too,
good
Gary.
Stuff from the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp. Good to spend time with him. Cranack, Elijah, that'll wrap for us, and we'll be back with you Tuesday at 4 on Hail Varsity.
Your reminder, if you're an Omaha listener, if you listen up with our affiliate on 590, we will have a best of running on Monday afternoon. So for our Omaha listeners or those in the 590 listening range, you can check us out.
About 7 states.
Yeah, Hey, dude, I'll make your job simple. Just play back today. Play back today's episode. That's all you got to do.
We could.
Best of.
Harder than and you'd sure, expect to be... break that into to hard segments. So we're instead going to play some of our favorite interviews of the past weeks and months. Ron Brown's going to be included. We're going to have Coach Michael Huffman from Bellevue West talking about Daniel Kalen and a whole lot more. So check that out Monday on 590 ESPN from 4 to 6.
Hey, thanks. What do I got to do to make that best of? Do I have to contribute to a best segment?
I think you got to take a day off work or two and come join us on a normal Monday through Friday show.
Yeah,
I got to figure that out. Goals.
Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, the podcast, the video, also Hail Varsity YouTube.
So is this like worst of? Is that what I'm hearing? Like
no.
How come no, I don't ever make the best of?
Because every again, single Saturday is a best of show with Mark Cranack.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
That's go pretty on. Good. Guys, yeah. Take care. Thanks for hanging out this morning.
Thanks for listening to the radio audio podcast live thing.
Weekend edition of Hail
Everybody.
Varsity.
All right.
Peace.